I just want to wish a happy birthday to my daughter Sierra. She is turning 7 today. So happy birthday, Sierra.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of June 11th, 2020. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you, Ted?
Good. Good. I'm glad to have you here, Mariah. So, time marches on. We are still in the grip of the COVID pandemic. God knows whether it's getting better or worse. We are also still in the grip of all the problems associated with the racism, systemic racism. We've talked about that a lot lately. That's still a major topic here in America. I think that we need to stay focused. We need to educate ourselves as a movement. The climate movement needs to embrace ever more thoughtfully the topic of the connection between racism and climate change. I think that's something that bears considerable thought. And I think it's true because, we cannot approach this as the crisis of the day and we're going to move on to the next crisis tomorrow. This is a fundamental thing about the way the system works. I think it behooves us to understand the implications because it's the right thing to do, and I think it's a very powerful way to frame the issue. Does that make any sense, Mariah? I mean, you would agree with me?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I think that's huge.
I mean, I have you ever heard a book called the Structure of Scientific Revolutions? I think I've talked about it. So back many decades ago, when I was in college, I thought I wanted to be a historian of science, not just a scientist, but a historian of science. So stay with me. You don't want to get whiplash. Read a book. This is 1972, called The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, and in that book, they talked about the scientific paradigm of quantum mechanics and the shift from classical mechanics to quantum mechanics. And this was a paradigm change, okay? And how just the whole view of the world changed, but how the world works is in your paradigm. And, of course, by the time the 1990s rolled around, paradigm had been adopted into business lingo. So everybody had to shift their paradigm all the time. I'm sure you've heard about paradigms. I see it as sort of this cheapened version of this very thoughtful book that I read a long time ago. But the idea of a new way of seeing the world is essentially what your paradigm of the world. And I think up to now, over the last several decades, the environmental movement has seen climate change as kind of a technical problem, an international negotiation problem, how we had to do all these things. What's becoming more and more clear is that the fundamental raw political fight over climate change is intimately bound up with the same forces that are enforcing systemic racism. And that justifies considerable thought. I hope we can maintain the focus on this topic over the course of time. I want to stop there, Mariah. If there's anything before I go on, have you got any response, or just to give you a chance to maintain your word count, as we say?
Yeah, I mean, I think that. So one of the articles I read talked about, George Floyd's last words were this, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe," which has really become this sort of chant of the oppression and the problems that we have with racism in our country. And the article, I think it was possibly in Gizmodo, I'm not sure, I'm sure we'll share links to it, but the article basically said that, George Floyd couldn't breathe because a cop killed him. But black people, black and brown people, people in minority communities have been dealing with not being able to breathe for a long time. The toxins and pollution, lead, there's so many examples of lead. In fact, I think that it was mentioned that there were underlying heart conditions. That's not what
Right.
killed Floyd. Of course, it was the cop that killed Floyd,
Right.
but he had an underlying heart condition, and you know, all of these things are. There was another person, Garner, who had an underlying condition that was killed by cops, who had an underlying condition of asthma, and this is because air pollution is so rampant in Black communities because of the environmental.
Racism,
You know, whenever, yeah, exactly, environmental racism associated. It's
well,
part of that, and so.
I mean, I think what you're saying is that the same system that imposes the police violence is also the one that imposes the pollution, right? And that's where the link is. You say these are they're essentially the same thing, because whether the policeman is killing you, or they're dumping pollution into your air. It's the same mindset, the same paradigm that sees the communities as expendable, no?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we both had talked about this great quote from the Sierra Club article by Hopkins. I love that name. But, you know, the quote he says is, you can't have climate change without sacrifice zones, and you can't have sacrifice zones without disposable people, and you can't have disposable people without racism. Mm-hmm. So essentially, racism allows us to view people as commodities, people as something that can be sacrificed, and therefore allows us to dump pollution into these areas of people who can be quote-unquote sacrificed, killing them. And if you get rid of that baseline that allows you to view people as lives that can be set, that are disposable, then you can no longer cite things that are going to kill them in their yard, right? Or in their backyard, so to speak. And I think that's a really salient point. You know, we sort of take for granted that, well, you know, the fossil fuels are dumping pollution into our air, but it's not necessarily hurting my breathing, right?
Right.
Because it's
right.
not in my backyard. So, but of course, it's hurting the whole world. And
I mean, ultimately, it hurts the entire world. But to your point, I mean, it is the locus of it is in communities of color, and the same. Yeah, I mean the
and it's a much more immediate locus, right? The,
right.
You know, communities of color are getting. They're having, you know, for me, I don't live near a power plant. I don't live near any kind of that I know of toxic pollution, you know, right. Who knows? But, and so I'm not going to get cancer from that or lead poisoning or anything like that, because I am viewed as a non-disposable human
life. If you found a toxic waste dump under your house, there would be not you personally, but there would be holy heck to pay, right? Your
right,
community
exactly.
would fix that, because you have the political clout and you would get the
right.
respect. And it just,
It's a disgusting, it's just awful that not everyone gets that same respect, you know, based on skin color. I mean,
and I think the Hopkins says that, yes, the connection between, I mean, another way to state the connection is between racism and climate is that if we valued everyone's life, if no one was disposable, then you could not put a coal plant anywhere. And
right.
we would have to find, and then you wouldn't have climate change. You would have ways of producing this stuff that were producing power or whatever technological thing you're going to do in ways that were respectful of the community where the stuff was sited. And there you go. I mean, it's the more you think about it, the more obvious it becomes that there is this link, and that in many sense, the adversary. Right. Well, if you avoid the word enemy, but the adversary is the same. The people that want to build a power plant also want to make sure that they can do it in this neighborhood. Right.
It's a hard truth to swallow. Right.
Right.
I mean,
right.
And of course, it's been like this for centuries. Right. And it's just, I don't know. Something else Hopkins had said is that we'll never stop climate change without ending white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
And that those, you know, that is just directly connected to the fact that if we view ourselves as superior to anything, it's much easier to have dominion over it, to control and dominate, instead of finding a way to work within the system, to work in a connected way, to make sure that all things are cherished and kept safe. The earth that is our home, the resources that are around us, the people that inhabit that planet, together, of all different belief systems and cultures and colors.
Well, I think the whole, you start when you say things like white supremacy, and then you say, yeah, this all began with this kind of European attitude that the New World was virgin territory. And I think the Hopkins article talks about the law cases where they decided legally back in England that America and Australia were empty because the people who lived there were not capable of possessing them properly, and that Western white man could walk in and take the places over. I mean, that attitude has progressed. I mean, that attitude is expressed in different ways today, right? So, but I forget the Latin term, terra nullis, I think, is the terra for earth and nullis for nothing. I mean, basically, it's all just sitting there, and the Western man, who's typically white, gets to take it from the Aborigine, from the Indian, and he gets to bring in the slaves to exploit it. And it's, you don't have to make many jumps from that to a circumstance where oil extraction in third world countries and then dumping all the pollution into the atmosphere for free is just a given right, right? That's what you're entitled to do because you're, I sometimes tread carefully because the words almost sound inflammatory and they sound paranoid. But just because you're paranoid doesn't mean it's not true, right? That there's this stuff that is historically happening that is just easy to close your eyes to. And you say, yeah, I mean, this stuff is all linked up. And the sooner we recognize it, the better off we all are.
Yeah. And, you know, something else that this article mentioned is that, you know, as long as police can take black lives, then none of us are truly safe. I think that's also a really good point. Just because we're on the side that, you know, where if there's a coal polluting in my backyard, someone will come and shut it down, that doesn't mean it will always be that case. What happens if all of a sudden, you know, it can just flip on a dime? And so standing up for humanity of all is a critical to, you know, just guaranteeing human rights for all. There's a quote I can't quite get but it's something like, you know, if you don't stand up for this person and then they're gone, and if you don't stand up for this person, they're gone, then who's going to stand up for you?
Right. First they came for the labor unions. Well, I guess I cannot pretend to be an expert in this topic. And so we don't want to pretend to any expertise that we don't have. Nor do I offer any solution right now. I'm just saying that there are, this is a time, a moment in which we should expand our view of the world, how the world works, to expand our paradigm, if you want, about what's causing the problem, what's the sort of hidden machinations that present us with these sort of combined problems, and what it's going to take then to solve. Again, I don't have a solution, Mariah. Let me know if you do. But I think that we begin by recognizing these things, right? We start talking about what they are. We learn as best we can what the circumstances are, and then hopefully solutions begin to present themselves, right?
Yeah. And I'm reading Ibram Kendi's How to Be an Anti-Racist, and I like this concept of it's not enough to be not racist, right? You have to stand up and say, I am actively against that. And it's the same thing with climate change. It's not enough to, peacefully sort of say, well, I think we should do something about that. I hope someone else does it. You have to take a stand for all of these things. And they're so intimately connected.
Well, there you go. Mariah, it is always interesting to explore these topics with you, to talk about them. I mean, I think that they're important to me, to you. I hope to people who are listening. I think that the climate movement I hope we're moving in the right direction. We can only do the right thing by learning as much as we can about these topics. And the right path will present itself, right?
Let's hope so.
So we'll leave it there. We will put up links to the articles that we talked about on the blog. The blog is at massclimateaction.org/net and slash blog. Mass Climate. I always forget if it's O-R-G or N-E-T, right? So, dear listener, Google Mass Climate
Action. I think it's Action. N-E-T, right?
I think it's N-E-T slash blog. If you want, send us a letter. Yeah, this is, I know I remember this one. Send us a letter to podcast@massclimateaction.net. So it must be net. You can listen to this podcast on any of the modern podcast distribution apps. And we'll close where we always close by saying that the United States must implement over the next decade a just and equitable plan to get us off carbon within the next 10 years. I'll leave it there. Mariah, thank you so much for...
And Ted, I will say it's...
Hmm?
It's net and org. You're right with either one. Net and
oh
org.
Oh, my God.
Both
okay.
Work.
So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here. We will continue reading and learning and hope to talk to you all again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Very cool.